The polls are open in Afghanistan. They were expected to be closed by now, but authorities are actually keeping them open for an extra hour, a sign of perhaps the robustness of the voting process or the concern about the Taliban wanting to disrupt the voting and keep people from going to the polls. Perhaps the extension will get more people to the polls because every vote counts in Afghanistan. Here's a voter speaking in Kabul.
We had to vote, and I know there's a lot of concerns all over the country. But this morning I thought I have to go, no matter what happens. I'm feeling hopeful. Despite all the difficulty we have, we might be able to turn this country around. And by coming to vote, we are hoping for a better future.
One of a number of voter voices obtained by our partners at the BBC from Kabul this morning. The contenders in the current election, President Hamid Karzai, of course, the front runner, one of 30 official candidates on the ballot. His top challenger is his former foreign minister, Abdullah Abdullah. And speaking about Abdullah Abdullah, was longtime foreign correspondent and someone who's actually spent a lot of time covering this election campaign itself. Charles Sennett, who spoke with us at the top of the hour, he's executive editor and vice president of Global Post, a web-based international news organization. Charles, first of all, how can you track this election using web sources and web information channels that you've managed to put in place anticipating this day?
Well, one thing we have is an excellent correspondent on the ground, Jean McKenzie. She's based for Global Post in Kabul, and she's very much in touch with aspiring young journalists in Afghanistan who are in many corners of the country. And we're able to track what's going on in large measure through her network of contacts. Also, it's really important to point out that Afghanistan has this nascent media movement that is really taking off, and journalists are getting better and stronger, and it is one of the great signs of weaknesses and fault lines running through this election is that the government, the central government, Karzai's government, cracked down on the media and it has been preventing them from reporting on the violence that led up to it. So there's another sort of subplot to this election, which is the free press. And that's not right. That's not winning in this election. That's losing out.
Well, joining us from the ground in Kandahar, special advisor to General Stanley McChrystal, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, once again is Sarah Chase, who joins us via cell phone from Kandahar. We spoke with a BBC correspondent in Mazar-e-Sharif earlier who said that polling was very orderly and peaceful and that the likelihood in other parts of the country was that it would not be, and that would really skew the election results. What are you seeing at this point, Sarah?
In Kandahar City, voting is going, is taking place in a fairly orderly fashion. We've been getting weather rounds pretty regularly since about 2 in the morning, and one just hit, and then I heard some machine gun fire afterwards. So that has a real dampening effect on people's psychology. I was speaking to a soldier from Northern Ireland, actually, last night when I arrived, and he said, you know, when there was a bomb warning, he was from outside Belfast, when there was a bomb warning, you'd just not go down to town for beers on a Friday night. It's a similar psychology here. People aren't really willing to risk their lives in order to vote. So what you have here is, especially in the districts, not so much in Kandahar City, but in the districts that really are under effective Taliban control, people just are not voting.
And right.
But the skew in the system is not that therefore there will be less Pashtun vote recorded. It's that that then opens the door to manipulation of the results by primarily in this area the Karzai campaign, which is already doing some deals with election officials. In other words, you have the police, which are loyal to Karzai in one district that I've been following, basically making deals with election officials to allow them to step the ballot boxes.
Well, Sarah Chase, I just want to alert our listeners that it is difficult to hear you on a cell phone line, but you are in Kandahar, right, in really the center of the action there. So what's the most important advice to Stanley McChrystal, the person that you are advising? Is it the turnout? Or is it the victor, the person who actually gets the most votes today?
I think the turnout issue is very important. I think it's important for international officials to compare any data that they may have that can give them a clear, you know, a fix on how many people actually voted, particularly in the dangerous districts, and compare that to the results that that are recorded for their districts. Now, that's not ISAC's job. ISAC is here to prevent physical danger to people on the day of the result, on the day of the vote. We're not, you know, it's not our responsibility to investigate the electoral procedures. However, it may be that ISAC can offer some data as to how many people were seen in the vicinity of polling places that could be very useful to the Election Complaints Commission.
Charlie Sennett, this is Amy Holmes here. Yesterday we talked to General Zinni about Afghanistan and our interest there, and it was notable that he did not discuss this election or democracy building or transparency. How important are these elections to U.S. interests moving forward?
I think they're very significant because you have to ask, 7 years into this experience of the United States being on the ground as an occupier and a military force in Afghanistan, what has been achieved? And if they are not able to provide security for this election, you know, it's a very fair question. What's been achieved? Where is it going to head? And I think the greatest challenge that the U.S. military faces in Afghanistan is countering the Taliban's hold in the south and the east in this very rural, very remote, rugged terrain. And one takeaway for listeners, I would say, is to remember that three-quarters of Afghanistan's population lives in the 30,000 villages that are outside the capital, that are these tiny hamlets that are impossible to get to. And this election is really about the challenge to bring order and security to those areas. Right now, time favors the Taliban, and
time
many
and
Afghans
space.
Are calculating
space. I mean, territory favors the Taliban as well.
Exactly. And time favors the Taliban in the sense that people are making the calculation that they believe the Taliban is going to be around longer than the U.S. forces on the ground.
Which raises another question to me. You use the word countering the Taliban. What about co-opting the Taliban? Mm-hmm. We saw reports that our troops are going to try to work with moderate Taliban. We saw in Iraq that part of the strategy there was to bring people into the system. Is that happening? Can that happen?
That's an excellent question. And I think the answer is yes, it is happening. It can happen. In our report on globalpost.com, we spoke with six Taliban leaders from the now deposed government about these ongoing negotiations. And we really tried to unpack the history and the complexity of Afghanistan in a way that you can see just how often it is that sides are switched in Afghanistan. This is sort of a part of the politics of Afghanistan is the shifting of allegiances. There are many moderate elements, as President Obama has called them, within the Taliban with whom the United States can negotiate. The hard part, as General Petraeus consistently points out, is deciphering who are the reconcilables. And right now, the U.S. military is in that process of trying to figure out exactly who they can negotiate with.
Well, it's also the hard part is actually saying that we're going to deal with the Taliban, which no U.S. official has been able to actually say. We just have about a minute, to Sarah Chase. I want to go back to you before we go. The president famously said in a meeting with veterans about a week and a half ago that the Afghan war is a war of necessity, that the U.S. has to be there because we were attacked. I don't believe it was the Taliban who attacked the United States. Do the people in Afghanistan believe this is a U.S. war of necessity?
They do believe that the United States takes it more seriously than any of its NATO allies. But I would just like to add to what Charlie just said about beginning to talk to the Taliban, to impress on listeners that the Afghan population is really caught in the middle. In order to fight the Taliban, the United States in particular, allied with real criminal leadership, brought it back into the country and established it in positions of power. That's largely why the Taliban insurgency has taken hold here. Nobody, I was in Kandahar at the fall of the Taliban government, and nobody was supporting it, and everyone was quite enthusiastic about the Karzai government. They've been disappointed by the Karzai government, but the international community has never really blown the whistle on some of the incredible instances of abuse of power and corruption, which the Afghan population thought it was up to the international community to do something about, since we had brought these people back into the country. So while it would be useful to work on a grassroots level to make it possible for Taliban foot soldiers to come back across, until there's a political system that people can, political environment
right.
that people can bear to live under, that's not going to be a lasting
right. Well, they're not on the ballot, but this referendum is very much about the Taliban. That's the takeaway from Sarah Chase, special advisor to General Stanley McChrystal. And Charles Sennett, where can we find globalpost.com?
Globalpost.com is online in our special report.
All right, great. Thanks,
Life,
Charlie.
Death and the Taliban.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.